We are going to be continuing what I've set up as part of the theme for Bible study for this week at Holden called The Images That Transform. Holden's theme for the summer has been In the Image of God. And I worked with that theme, came up with five, six Bible studies on the theme. And today's sub-theme is Challenging the Dominant Images. And we're working from Mark chapter 5. You don't need to turn to that for a while. We're going to look at some Old Testament things first. But what our study deals with today is with probably something that you've heard or read in the Scriptures many times and maybe have not quite understood or couldn't quite figure out or whatever, what it meant. And that's those ideas of clean and unclean. An unclean spirit, an unclean this, an unclean that, or a clean this or a clean that. What is that all about? Well, that's what we're going to talk about today. And I think that Mark chapter 5 is a really good chapter to talk about Jesus' relationship to clean and unclean. But first of all, I think in order to kind of help get the frame of mind of kind of the nature of clean and unclean, I'd like to suggest that you think about the way we use the word dirty. Dirty. We often can talk about going out in the garden and getting our hands dirty. And we come in and we wash them with soap, and they're clean. But we use the word dirty for other things as well. And I ask that you might throw out some of those examples of things that are dirty.
Dirty joke.
What makes those things that?
This one taken. Yeah, go ahead.
Okay, let me slow down. First thing I heard was dirty words. What makes a word dirty and a word not dirty?
Connotation.
Meaning, connotation. Who makes those decisions on that, though? Society, and sometimes it can be a personal choice. I did a Bible study in a congregation not long ago, and after the study, a woman came up to me, and she chastised me for using the word gee, because I had said gee whiz. To her, that was a dirty word. Because for her, I was trying to say something about God when I said gee. And that, to me, wasn't a dirty word at all. I was really surprised. For her, it was a dirty word. But in society, we choose that certain words are dirty. Or, let's call them this way, socially impolite. Okay? Dirty words. Dirty jokes. What makes a joke dirty? Yeah?
Sometimes it's really a put-down of the human anatomy.
Okay. Okay? Other things that would make a joke dirty.
You limit who you tell it to.
Oh. Okay. And why wouldn't you tell it to other people?
You either feel embarrassed or you think they would.
Okay.
Or maybe know they wouldn't approve.
Or maybe it's about them. Okay, what other kinds of dirty things are there?
Dishes.
Easy clean. That's the kind of dirt we're talking about. Face value dirt.
We make a lot of issues about our sexuality dirty.
Why do we do that? That's the $10,000 question. Fear?
Fear, uncomfortable, or...
Okay.
There's been a lot of dirty jokes about certain parts of the anatomy, so therefore you associate that part of the anatomy with something unclean.
Okay. Oh.
He says it's Queen Victoria's
fault. Probably was.
Yeah.
Okay, what other kinds of...
Referring to bodily functions, same thing.
Okay, yeah.
Right. Dirty tricks.
Right, what are those?
All something that you think is a joke and you might play it on your neighbor, but it might cause him headaches and problems.
Okay. Other kinds of dirty. What are experiences that you have that you come away feeling dirty? Don't get too personal. You might need to.
I'd like to add one to the list. Dirty linen. You know,
oh,
that, yeah, I think it's an old yeah, statement that you don't show your dirty linen.
Yeah. Or someone in the first session this morning said something about dirty money. And then someone else said, yeah, that's why we have to launder it.
dirty politics.
Yeah. Yeah. Yes, I heard. Okay. What other experiences, though, do you have that you come away from feeling dirty?
Oh, my son-in-law had a birthday party when he was 50, and I was invited, and his friends had some jokes and gifts that I thought were just gross, and I came away from there feeling embarrassed. Mm-hmm. This year, my daughter turned 50, and she refused to have a party like that, and I was real proud of her. You know, and they all thought it was just funny, mm-hmm. and I just thought it was yucky.
Okay.
And our pastor's wife was there, and I was embarrassed because she was there. And I thought, I wonder what she's thinking. Well, I was a pastor's wife, too, and I know how I would have felt if I had gone to some of the parties.
Why should a pastor's wife feel different than anybody else?
Because people expect you to be different.
Okay, other well, there's a double standard, but you know.
Yeah, sure is.
Other things around feeling dirty.
Well, a lot of times when I've been in the grocery store and touching, like, everybody else touches like carts, and so I feel dirty.
Oh, okay. Fine. Good one. Yeah.
When people make remarks about other ethnic groups, whether it be Hispanics, the Indian culture, gay, lesbian population, anything like that, that's really uncomfortable.
Okay. Are there places that you've gone and you've come back from and felt dirty? Nobody would admit it, I suppose.
Yeah, the subway in Boston.
Okay, the subway in Boston. Okay, what goes through your mind? You know, what's the feeling like?
Well, at the end of the line when we were going to this great Chinese restaurant, there was garbage everywhere, and it, you know, it gets picked up daily, so it was just that day's garbage.
Okay. Couple more, and then we'll...
Nightclub in Tijuana.
Yeah. All right. What's that like? Never been there.
It's ridiculously terrible sometimes.
Remember those feelings and descriptions around the word dirty in our society, because they're not all that different from what Judaism did with the word unclean. Often things that were not necessarily explainable, but just feelings that one would have, would be dirty. Okay? Now, what Jews did, and when I say Jews, I mean, you know, the Jewish culture of that time. They had a theology that said that, as you may well know, and I may have to move this board that was moved this way a little bit, or that group. No one's going to see perfect, I'm sorry about that. But they had a theology that said that they were, of all the people of the nations of the earth, they were the people who were to be priests to the other nations. They were to have a special role within the nations of the world. And in order to be a priest, it was felt that one would need to be set apart as somebody different, having a higher value system, or having a different way of being about life, a different way of relating. And what the Jews did is they established all sorts of customs, all sorts of ways of thinking, all sorts of ways of socializing their children into this mentality by using the phrase clean and unclean. The theology in time led them to be very exclusivistic. Instead of being a priest that's there to serve, they became priests set apart, holy, and removed. In fact, what they said was that God ministers to us, the Jewish nation, directly, but he sends his angels or her angels to the other nations to help them. That's why the angel talk in the New Testament, among Paul in particular, powers and principalities and that kind of language is important, because that's part of the mindset that this nation was different, but it led to exclusivity. And of course, that's often what Jesus' admonition to the people are, is that you become too exclusive. You've taken your rules and you've taken your legislation that has really been to set you apart and help you be priests, and you've made it to be something that is now status and that you're more important. Not all Jews, but many Jews became very legalistic. Some Jews became legalistic, just like some Christians are legalistic. Not all Christians, but some, okay? It happens in every religious, in every theology, if you will, from left to right. There are those extremes. If you want to understand that from the Old Testament point of view, that's what the story of Jonah is about. It's not about whether Jonah swallowed the whale or the whale swallowed Jonah or whether you can swallow the story. It's a story of the fact that there was a Jewish prophet sent to a non-Jewish nation to bring the good news, if you will, to come back, come into relationship with God, and he wouldn't go. I'm not going to go to those people. You've got to be kidding. I'm not going. And he didn't. Then he changed his mind. The whale was used in that. And then when he went and they repented, which is what he didn't expect them to do, then he sulked. They're not supposed to repent. We're the chosen people. He sat under a bush. And of course, God had to slowly but surely change his mind and say, Jonathan, yeah, this is what I'm about. I'm the God of the nations, not just your God. Okay? Now, together with their theology went the science of the day. The science of that time was based on cause and effect. For everything that happened, there had to be a cause. If a person was born blind, there had to be a cause. But they were not skilled in ophthalmology, so that cause became linked to sin. Remember Jesus being asked, Rabbi, who sinned? This person's parents? Is that why they were born blind? And he says, you know, nobody sinned. Not because Jesus knew more about science than they did, but because he knew that what was happening in this distinction between clean and unclean was becoming becoming very destructive in the relationships of the people. The worldview of Jesus' day, Jesus' day so much, it was beginning to change a little bit, but from Genesis on, is that the world was flat and sat on four corners. It's called the four corners of the earth, sat on pillars. And out here and under here, largely was water. Except here, this was Sheol, the land of the underworld, the land of shadows. Why was the land of shadows? Because the sun didn't shine there. The sun was up here. And it was suspended up here. And the moon was suspended. That's not a banana, that's the moon. And the stars, they were hung. And up here, it was blue because this was water. Because that's what the Genesis story said. And God separated the waters from above and the waters from below. And the land appeared. When it rained, well, it was easy. Just open the windows a little bit, and the rain comes through. So we're asking God to fit the windows, okay? No. In some cultures, they had myths, like the Babylonians had myths, of how the sun got from here back to here and around back to here again. And it was kind of, went down to Sheol and was put in a boat and was ferried across the bottom, and then it kind of started up here again. That's what it worked. That's the mindset, okay? And that's really important to understand when we talk about clean and unclean, because sometimes the clean and unclean was simply a way of dealing scientifically with certain kinds of problems, like disease. If you had a contagious disease, they knew that if I had a certain skin disease and I was too close to somebody, they would get it. So it would make sense to call me unclean and remove me, isolate me, until my disease would be healed. That's early science, early medicine, if you will. So I would say that primarily these two things led to the development of this system of clean and unclean. I'll ask you, if you will, to turn to Leviticus chapter 11. That's in the Old Testament. Genesis, Exodus, Leviticus, third book. Now, life was filled with all kinds of mysteries people didn't understand. All kinds of mysteries. And as those things needed to be explained, those categories of clean and unclean were used. But let me say this right now, and hear me very clearly. When clean and unclean was first used, it had no moral connotation. It did not have a moral connotation. By the time Leviticus is written, it's just beginning to have a moral connotation, where unclean might be sinful, or less than, or shameful. But originally, it didn't have that. It just meant either separate or set apart, or scientifically, a way to not be able to define the mysteries. We don't understand how it happens. It's got to be kind of holy and odd, so we'll just put it in the category of unclean. The holy wasn't clean, it was unclean. God was a mystery to be feared in the sense of, ooh, I don't understand this. Initially, you might even say God was in the category of unclean. But less so when this began to take on moral values. That came over time. At least that's what we seem to see in some of the other earlier writings and things that we see. But starting in Leviticus chapter 11, if you will, we begin the whole section of clean and unclean. And for the first five chapters, they're going to talk about clean and unclean things. So let's start, just look at a couple of these. first of all, starting in 11:2, speak to the people of Israel, saying, from all the land animals there are creatures you may eat. An animal that has divided hooves and is cleft footed and chews the cud, those you can eat. But among those that chew the cud or have divided hooves, you shall not eat the following: the camel, the rock badger, the hare, the pig, so forth. Okay? That was just the way their science said certain animals don't cook them. Well, we know probably why pigs and all of those things were put in those categories. We know that from our own scientific understanding of probably what they thought. But they didn't know. They just knew that sometimes you get real sick from eating that, but better not eat it. So God says, hey, protect the priesthood, protect this nation of mine, so don't eat this kind of stuff, okay? So then it goes into things about the waters, and everything in the water's clean. You go on about the birds. There's certain birds that you don't want to eat, because those eat other things that eat unclean things. Oftentimes, if something that's clean eats something unclean, it makes it unclean, so you can't eat it either. I'll try to slow my speech down. Need more mouthy. Winged insects, carcasses of any animal. You can just kind of look through the list there. Okay. Starting in 12, we start looking at another great mystery of life, and that was the mystery of conception and birth. Do you know, can you guess how long it took them scientifically to figure out that intercourse led to a baby 9 months later? That's a pretty long distance of cause and effect. All they knew was that after a certain period of time, this woman started getting really big and all of a sudden she had a baby. Where did that come from? I don't get it. It must have taken them some time to figure that out, that connection. But they had figured it out by chapter 12. But that women in that time of childbirth were considered unclean, probably to protect her and to protect the child, but still unclean. And circumcision, and then menstruation, and all of those things. Then you go to 13, you start looking at skin diseases, and everything was called leprosy. It was probably everything from soup to nuts, but anything that, you know, you can look at this. But notice who it is that makes the distinction between clean and unclean. The priest. Pretty powerful fellow. And it was fellow. There we go. Okay? That person had the right to say whether you're clean or unclean. That's significant. Very. For the New Testament. So look through that, look through all those other things, leprosy, go to 14, and then here's the ritual for the leprous person at the time of cleansing. You go to the priest, and they go out of the camp, they look at you, and you know, and then you have the sacrifices that were made in order to get you back in right relationship, and you can go through there about all that. Starting in chapter 15, we even see that men could be unclean, okay? A lot of people don't think men were ever unclean, but guess what? They can be unclean too. And on to 16 is a little bit of an interlude. But then beginning in chapter 18, it talks again now about unclean relationships. That there are certain relationships that are unclean. You know, incest, some other things are mentioned there. Okay? This is where the clean and unclean rituals began, if you will, in the Old Testament. There are other people that could be clean and unclean. Remember, if they were a kingdom of priests, what eventually began to happen is that all foreigners were considered unclean. Certain animals. Blood. Because blood was considered to be the source of life. That's where your life source came from, your blood. When blood was spilled, it was considered to cry out from the ground until it was properly dealt with. And if you were murdered, then the blood would cry out for revenge. And so if we were hunting, two families were out hunting, and one son killed the other son by accident or on purpose, then the revenge would be worked out on the life of the son who had done the killing. But because you had killed that son, that blood would cry out for revenge on the other son. And that other son back to this daughter, and that daughter on to that husband. And it just went on and on, like Hatfields and McCoys. When Jesus gives the injunction to Jesus, when the injunction is given in the Old Testament, an eye for an eye, a tooth for a tooth, what that is it's not a permission to do revenge. It's basically a commandment to stop the revenge. Stop it in the first generation. An eye for an eye, a tooth for a tooth, that's all. That's all. Okay? That's often used to justify all kinds of things. But, you know, what that is a limitation, not a permission statement. Foreigners, animal, blood, certain kinds of sexual experiences or circumstances. Just to name a few, okay? Keep those in mind. My sexual behavior is fine. All right, but the priest was the one that got to do all of that. Now, over time, we'll show you how it came over time. Turn to Mark chapter 1. Let's move it in the New Testament. Take it with us. Take all this stuff with us. Again, like I said, you want to be a good New Testament scholar, you'll know your Old Testament really well. Starting in Mark chapter 1, starts out the beginning of the good news of Jesus Christ, the Son of God. The reader in Mark knows from the very beginning who this Jesus is and what he's about. That's why you can watch all the disciples bumbling around and going, ha, ha, boy, you guys are really slow. Because Mark is setting you up as a reader to really know everything as the journey along the way continues. Mark does in about 15 verses what takes Matthew and Luke about 3 chapters to do. He is just blazing on in his story because he has some things he wants to talk about. And one of the things Mark talks about a lot is clean and unclean. It doesn't take long for Jesus to come into a circumstance to meet an unclean person. It starts in verse 21. Someone want to read us 21 through 28?
He went to Capernaum, and when the Sabbath came, Jesus went into the synagogue and began to teach. The people were amazed at his teaching because he taught them as one who had authority, not as the teachers of the law. Just then, a man in their synagogue who was possessed by an evil spirit cried out, "What do you want with us, Jesus of Nazareth? Have you come to destroy us? I know who you are, the Holy One of God." "Be quiet," said Jesus sternly. "Come out of him." The evil spirit shook the man violently and came out of him with a shriek. The people were all so amazed that they asked each other, "What is this? A new teaching and with authority? He even gives orders to evil spirits and they obey him." News about him spread quickly over the whole region of Galilee.
Someone have eyes to see and ears to hear. This is a very important story and it almost sets the tone for much of Mark. It's going to distinguish between two things. We're going to have two unclean stories in one chapter. The first one is here. Jesus goes into the synagogue. And starting in verse 40, Jesus is going to have another conversation that's going to involve the priesthood. Okay? I'm going to distinguish between the two. Who were the people in the who were the rulers of the synagogue?
Priests.
No, they were the temple. Okay. The synagogue was operated by the Pharisees, and sometimes they're called scribes. But like I said, these are the people that could read and write. They could also be priestly scribes, but often they could be in the synagogue. The synagogue was a place where the scriptures were studied, not the sacrifices, nothing else, just the scriptures, the Torah. It was studied, it was argued back and forth, they just went at it like lawyers. They had the best time. You know, and Jesus, whenever he'd have a conversation with a Pharisee, he just enjoyed that because that was, I think, out of his own tradition. There's some evidence to believe Jesus was part of the Pharisaic tradition by the clothing that gets touched in our story in Mark 5 today. So he goes into the synagogue, and he has his first encounter with a person with an unclean spirit. What that is, I'm not exactly certain, but we can kind of guess. Notice that in the reading from the text or from the Bible that was read, it was already called an evil spirit. All of a sudden, we've lost unclean, we've made it evil. Some Bibles probably say sinful. Whoa, that's a big jump. Let's go back to unclean, okay? Keep that the understanding that you have of unclean is broader than just something sinful. But what does he do? First of all, where is he at? He's in the synagogue? What is an unclean person doing in the synagogue? What's he say?
What are you going to do with us,
Jesus?
Who, us? Who, us?
Obviously, he's one of the Pharisees.
Yeah. He's part of the temple. He's part of the synagogue. He's one of the Pharisees. He's one of them. He was in their synagogue. It wasn't that he just wandered through the door. I've had that happen in church where I've had people come in and during the sermon do strange things. Whew, that's scary. But this was a member of the congregation. Okay? And he says, what do you have to do with us, Jesus of Nazareth? Us, the Pharisees, the scribes, the people of the scriptures. Have you come to destroy us? What's the answer?
Jesus said, be quiet.
Right.
Come out of him.
Okay. And then what? Comes out.
Shook the man violently.
Yeah. Well, this unclean stuff is pretty heavy stuff.
And they were all amazed.
They're amazed because what does he bring? A new teaching. To where?
Synagogue.
Have you come to destroy us? No, not the synagogue. I bring you a new teaching. And not only that, I have authority now. Jesus has authority now over this. And who did this belong to?
Priests.
Now are you starting to get that clue as to why I said the priests are the ones that put Jesus to death? Because Jesus is taking this whole scenario, if you will, and saying it's no longer valid. It's not valid. Because what's happening in clean and unclean is that we're making a classed society. There are people who are the very clean, and they're the powerful ones, and they have all the money, and they have all the land, and they have all the wealth, and they have all the respect of the people, and they love the Romans. And the rest of you that are unclean, down here mucking along. Okay? And the priesthood was part of that group that put that in place. Fortunately. Let's go to 40. Here's another unclean story. This time it's a leper. I'll read. A leper came to him, begging him, kneeling, said to him, if you choose, you can make me clean. Moved with pity. If you have an alternative a number there that says look down at the bottom for another word instead of pity, what might that word be? You have a little number or a letter that says
anger.
Moved with anger. Okay, we'll come back to that. Jesus stretched out his hand and touched him and said to him, I do choose, be made clean. Immediately the leprosy left him and he was made clean. After sternly warning him, he sent him away at once, saying to him, see that you say nothing to anyone, but go show yourself to the priest and offer for your cleansing what Moses commanded as a testimony to them. But he went out and began to proclaim it freely and to spread the word so that Jesus could no longer go into a town openly, but stayed out in the country, and people came to him from every quarter. What do you make of it? What's going on in this story? This is about the synagogue, and we know that Jesus is not going to destroy it. He brings a new teaching. What's he saying about the priesthood, and what's going on in that story?
Jesus specifically asked the man not to go to anyone but the priest, to be a testimony to what had happened.
Mm-hmm.
He was really trying to undermine the priesthood then, in that case, wasn't he?
Well, I think he's showing the priesthood that a new authority has arisen on the scene.
Proclamation. He's proclaiming.
Mm-hmm. Look what the leper says to him.
He was making the leper clean, not the priest.
Yes. The leper comes to Jesus and says, if you choose, you can make me clean. Now, do you know why Jesus was probably moved with anger and not pity? It wasn't, oh, you poor thing. Maybe it was pity. Maybe it was angry pity. But it was anger in the sense that, at what? What would be the anger? At the poor leper? The whole notion of clean and unclean that had to come to this kind of thing. Where people were wandering around being thrown out of life, being pushed aside, saying, you're not valid, you're not of value, you're a second-class citizen. I was taught by one of my professors up in Vancouver that anytime you find an alternative reading that makes less sense than the one that's there, it's probably the accurate one. To him throughout his life with the priests dealing with these kind of issues. Ooh. And he goes, go to Moses, do the things that God commands you. I'm not going to undermine that. But do it as a testimony to them. Ooh. Ooh-wee. Okay. Now, take a look at chapter 14:3. I hope that, you know, if you're not that quick with the Bible, that's fine. You can read it, listen, and we'll read it to you. Would someone read 14:3 out loud, please?
And while he was in Bethany, in the house of Simon the leper, as he sat at the table, a woman came with an alabaster flask of ointment of pure nard, very costly, and she broke the flask and poured it over his head.
What do you see in that verse that maybe you've never seen before until now? He's in the house of a leper. Jesus is in the house of a leper. We always look at the woman. We get so, you know, because we're looking at the costliness and we think, but we miss the point that, yeah, she's going to do something with some costly stuff, but he is in the presence of the unclean. He's at his table. It's not a former leper. It's Simon the leper. Jesus is beginning to break down that structure. He's challenging the dominant images of the day and the dominant images in about the relationships we have, how we reflect God's image one to another. Up until that point had been in terms of clean and unclean. God is happy with the clean and not so happy with the unclean. But Jesus brings a radically new message. Let's go to chapter 5 now, to the chapter of the day. I didn't get through this whole chapter with people first hour, and I probably won't with you, but that's okay. We'll just do what we can. I guess it's so hard to remember. There are three stories that we deal with there. Might as well list them out so we can see, and they're all related. Oh, I probably should let that on. Oh, you guys have good memories. We've set the stage. We've done it. What's the first story in chapter 5? What's it called?
Jesus heals a man with evil spirit.
Oh, that evil spirit again. Okay. What's it also known as?
Demon possessed.
This is often called the healing of the Gerasene demoniac. Have you heard that phrase? Is that too technical? Okay, I'm just going to list it as that because that's the Gerasene demoniac. Gerasene was a city 30 miles away from the Sea of Galilee. It was a Roman city. It was part of the cities of what was called the Decapolis. There were 10 cities that were very heavily Roman occupied. What's the next story that's mentioned? Okay, the healing of Jairus' daughter. We just did this in Lutheran churches not long ago in sermons. What's the next woman? What's the next passage? My brain's ahead of myself. What else is intertwined with this story?
The sick woman.
Hey, what's your problem?
She's your blood.
Okay, we're going to call it woman with a hemorrhage. These are stories of clean and unclean. I don't know how to spell hemorrhage, but I think it's close enough.
That's right.
I think that's right. Okay, these are stories that deal with this, challenging the dominant images of clean and unclean. Now, I'm going to talk a little bit first about these two and a little bit about my anger. Yesterday I told you there was someone at first hour that was angry about Bible translators, that they don't translate everything as directly as they could. And that's because we haven't had the eyes to see until recently some of those things. And in 10 years, we'll have a different set of eyes to see things that we never saw before. That's why you got to keep in Bible study. You never learn enough, and you never learn at all. These two stories, at least in the Lutheran lectionary, they're not two stories, even though Mark weaves them like this. These two stories belong together. They do not belong taken apart. And our Lutheran lectionary, and the Presbyterians, and all mainline churches, neatly cut this one out and use this one and leave this one alone. That's really sad. It's really sad. So, be aware of that. And we'll get to those two if we're quick. Now, we're going to start with a funny little story here called the Gerasene Demoniac. And let me read it to you. And I'm going to break you up into some groups again. We need some time to talk. And I'm going to give you a couple clues as to what the story might be about, and let's see what you do with it. See if you can have some fun with the story. But first, I'll go ahead and read it, and I can then add a little bit of Greek here and there as maybe appropriate. Oh, first of all, they came to the other side of the sea. In Mark, Jesus is always on one side of the Sea of Galilee or the other. Not always, but in this section. When he's on one side of the Sea of Galilee, he's in Galilee with his people, Galilean, okay? When he's on the other side of the sea, he's with Gentiles. And it's very important when you look at stories, you know, it'll always say where he is. He was on, and he went across the other side of the sea. Now he's on the other side of the sea, now he's on this side of the sea. We don't know what side of the sea he's on, but it's important that you know which side he's on, according to what the message is that he's bringing. And this is very significant here, that he is among the heavily occupied Gentile Roman part of the country. They came to the other side of the sea, to the country of the Gerasenes, already unclean. When he had stepped out of the boat, he he immediately, a man of the tombs, with an unclean spirit, met him. He lived among the tombs, and no one could restrain him anymore, even with a chain. For he had often been restrained with shackles and chains, but the chains had wrenched apart and the shackles broken pieces, and no one had the strength to subdue him. Night and day among the tombs and on the mountains, he was always howling and bruising himself with stones. When he saw Jesus from a distance, he ran and bowed down before him. And he shouted at the top of his voice. They do a lot of shouting, these unclean things. What have you to do with me, Jesus, Son of the Most High God? This can also read, what do we have in common, Jesus, Son of the Most High God? I adjure you by God, do not torment me. For he had said to him, probably as he was running toward him full tilt, come out of the man, you unclean spirit. Then Jesus asked him, what is your name? He replied, my name is Legion, for we are many. He begged him earnestly not to send them out of the country. Now there was on the hillside, or the mountain, a great herd of swine was feeding. And the unclean spirits begged him, send us into the swine, let us enter them. So he gave them permission, or he dismissed them. Okay. And the unclean spirits came out and entered the swine, and the herd, numbering about 2,000, charged down the steep bank into the sea and were drowned in the sea. The swineherds ran off and told it in the city and in the country. Then people came to see what it was that had happened. They came to Jesus and saw the demoniac sitting there clothed and in his right mind, the very man who had the legion, and they were afraid. Those who had seen what had happened to the demoniac and to the swine reported it. Then they began to beg Jesus to leave their neighborhood. As he was getting into the boat, the man who had been possessed by demons begged him that he might be with him. But Jesus refused and said to him, go home to your people and tell them how much the Lord has done for you and what mercy he has shown you. And he went away and began to proclaim in the Decapolis how much Jesus had done for him. And everyone was amazed. I'll ask you to work in small groups of four or so in taking a look at the story. I won't give you a ton of time because I want to get to a couple other things before we are finished today. Let me give you one clue. Actually, a couple of them. First of all, this is a story on two levels. I would ask you, first of all, at the first level, to just look at clean and unclean and what it means and what it doesn't mean. For all the uncleannesses in the story, there are a lot of them. And what Jesus does, all of that kind of stuff. The story of actually Jesus, again, confronting the clean and unclean system of the day. And then, if you have a little tiny second of time or two, or this piques your imagination more, look at the second level of the story, which is what Mark was doing and using this story for in his community. He lived, Mark was written about the year 70 to 75 AD, which is about the time the temple was destroyed by the Romans. The clue at the second level is that the word legion that's used there is not a Greek word, it's not an Aramaic word, it's a Latin word, a Roman word, and it stands for a military division of troops, okay? And of course, clean and unclean, you know who the unclean ones are in the eyes of the people, the Romans' occupation force. If you want to laugh as you read the story, feel free, because it is rather funny.
The herdsman.
The herdsman.
Yeah. And his yes. family.
Yes.
And his friends.
Yeah. Okay. Lots of unclean. Lots of unclean. See, even, you know, even though sheep were clean animals, shepherds who tended them were unclean because it was felt that they grazed on other people's land, thereby stealing. And of course, they didn't out in the fields. They didn't have time to do all those cleansing, purification things. So they were considered to be very unclean people. So when God chooses to appear to shepherds to announce the birth of Jesus, you're dealing with a very significant statement there. He doesn't appear to the clean, clean, clean. He appears to the unclean. Those called unclean by this time. We're beginning to see society divided into classes. And that's really the thing that Jesus attacks. And it's the priesthood that allows that class system to continue. And they should know better. Shouldn't they? I don't know. I'm part of that. Yeah, well, yeah. Okay, so we've got a story here at the first level about Jesus, the clean and the unclean, one more time. What about the second level? What about Mark's community? What do they need to hear from this? Anybody have any discoveries they made along the way? Hazard a guess. That's okay.
Could we go back a minute?
Yeah.
Unless there isn't time for this.
Go.
Okay, we had a discussion about demon possession. Okay. Lots of times the mentally ill, particularly in the past, have been considered possessed. Some people to this day think they are. How does a demon come into a person? It's when your guard's down.
Probably to answer that, you have to go back into looking at some very early understandings that, you know, pre-psychological understandings that go way back. And I know that, you know, I don't have either the, I'm not equipped personally to talk about it. I don't know. You know, I've heard a lot of discussion about it, and most folks just write it off as pre-scientific understanding, you know, in terms of that. Today, I think we're much more aware, especially through the work of someone like a Scott Peck, that deals with the reality of evil, that there is an evil presence, that we sophisticated types have tried to say, nah, that's just superstition, that there is a reality of an evil power at work. So that's a really good one. That would be a whole good week at Holden here. I'll write it down for my next project. But, you know, I don't know.
Mm-hmm. Well, often mentally ill in the past, not so much now, but they've been told that God is punishing them.
Yes.
And they have a demon, and it's very hard to get well with that concept.
You bet it is. Certainly, because if you have a demonic spirit, then you're the antithesis. Inside you is the antithesis of God. What a horrible thing to do to somebody. Perhaps part of our clean and unclean system.
Yeah, really. Mental illness is understood, and so it's scary.
Yeah, exactly. Call it unclean, or dirty, or whatever. Maybe not dirty, but at least less than.
Misunderstood.
Well, thanks.
Spirit unclean because people were afraid if they got too near to him that it might sort of come into them.
Mm-hmm.
Or sort of like catching a disease.
Yeah, certainly.
You know, if you go back to this Leviticus and all the list of what's unclean, and how much of that do we still believe in? You know, how much have we given up as being not true? How much have we retained is still being true? You know, if you listed all the things here, if you had a list of 20, and we thrown out 15 and still retain 5, and
yeah.
Say, well, you know, still today, this is the truth.
Mm-hmm.
But we don't have to believe in those other 15 truths because they don't fit us anymore. See?
Mm-hmm. But we still maintain the structure of clean and unclean, even though we may change the contents.
I don't understand that.
Okay. I think that, well, let me ask. Somebody catch what I'm saying or thinking on that? And
well,
want to add to that?
In my country, I'm afraid it's the caste system.
Mm-hmm.
It's sort of the separating people out from middle class, working class, and so on.
Mm-hmm. We might not call it clean and unclean, but what psychology today is trying to show us is that we are very much a part of a shame and honor society, where there are certain people who are honored, who are held above, and other people who are shamed by what they do or who they are or who they're not. And that's the same kind of diversification of people into groupings, into stereotypes. That's what I'm saying. I think the structure is there. We may change the contents. It may no longer be, you know, people with leprosy and people with this, but it may be other kinds of circumstances, other kinds of, well, who would be unclean people in our day?
The AIDS.
People with AIDS. Who else?
People on welfare.
Mm-hmm. Who else?
Addicts. People with menial jobs.
Okay. Yeah.
We have a hard time getting people to handle menial jobs. No, you know, that job, I'm above that job.
Okay.
Street people.
Okay. I have helped out helped out the timber community group that's working to help these communities with that the recent legislation of the timber industry is impacting. And, you know, what we often do in order to satisfy that in our mind is we take the timber worker and make them less than a real person. Well, they're just a bunch of dumb loggers anyway. They don't have an education. They don't this. They don't that. And we say those things in our own mind in order to get away from the fact that we're dealing with a crisis as big as the San Francisco earthquake in these communities. Their whole structure is being destroyed by the legislation. Now, I'm very big on the environment as well. But, you know, it's that balance that I have to do, that if I want to protect this, I also have to care for these people. But, you know, those are both big agendas for me personally. And I see that classification, if you will, of the clean and unclean right there. And I don't even live in a timber-based community, but my community is going to be impacted, as well as all the big cities, by this in time. Okay. Yes, that's the punchline of the day, so I'm glad we got to it early. But I want to move us back to Mark 5 and go back to that social situation Mark finds his community in. The clue I gave you was that Legion means a Roman military division. And we know that in the Decapolis, that was the headquarters for the 10th Legion of the Roman army. And the symbol of that legion was a boar. Now the Romans were considered very unclean, very unclean. This is a funny story. This is a story that Mark writes to his community to get them laughing. He puts it in code so that the people who are under the oppression of the Roman army will know who is the Lord. Okay? Let me go back and reread it to you from that perspective. Think about the man being a symbol of, at the second level of the story, the Roman army. He gets to the other side of the sea. This man comes out of the tombs, the place of the dead. And there was a lot of death and dying that the Roman army, you know, impacted in the lives of these people. Okay. Those tombs may have been very likely tombs of patriots. But this man comes out of the tombs, has an unclean spirit, he lives among them. And look at the description of him. No one can restrain him, even with a chain. He'd often been restrained, shackles and chains wrenched apart, shackles broken pieces. No one had the strength to subdue him. Isn't that the Roman army as it marches through Palestine? You bet it is. They came in like a herd of hurdles and just wiped it out. I mean, that was just their way. It was like blitzkrieg. It was like the old Hitler kind of lightning warfare. That was the concept of the Roman army. Domination. And no one could subdue him, no matter what kind of chains and shackles you put on him. It wouldn't be subdued. And so he sits on the nights on the tombs, and he's always howling and, you know, talking about who he is and what he's not, bruising himself with stones. Okay? So when he sees Jesus from a distance, this Roman army, runs, bows down, oh, what a thought, and then yells at the top of his voice, "What do we have in common, Jesus, Son of the Most High God? What do we have in common? You're about the imperial work of somebody, and so am I. Your God, my God. I adjure you by God, don't torment me." People are just kind of going, "For he had said to him, 'Come out of the man, you unclean spirit.' Then Jesus asked him, 'What's your name?' And he replies in a Roman military form, 'My name is Legion, an Roman army division, for we are many,'" play on words. And then what did he say? What? He what? "Begs him earnestly not to send him," no, "them, out of the country." So they look over at the mountain or the hillside, and there's a big herd of pigs. "Oh, let us go live in the pigs." And the people are going, "Yeah, great place for them, in the pigs." You know, nothing more the Jews hated worse than pigs, you know. Sure, let those Roman army soldiers with their standard with the boar on it, let them go live in the pigs. So he dismissed them. Troops dismissed. So what do? They go into the pigs, about 2,000. We know a legion was anywhere probably about 2 to 8,000 men. And they go into the pigs, they rush down the steep banks of the sea and drown themselves in the sea, because that's from whence they came. The Roman army came to Palestine first by sea. Okay, they had a navy that the people hadn't seen before, and that had a number. So then the keepers, the ones that were tending the Roman army, they ran off and they went and told the city and the country, and everybody came. And they saw Jesus and this former person sitting there. And They're afraid. Yeah, that would be too. But those who had seen what had happened to the demonic Ezra reported it. Reported it to who? To who? To Rome? Is that why Mark's community is under persecution? Maybe reported it to the wealthy, because, you know, those 2,000 pigs weren't owned by the swine herds. No landowner in their right mind who owned that many pigs would tend them themselves, because that was an unclean, shameful occupation. You hired that out. Maybe those pigs were being raised to feed the Roman army, and maybe somebody's economic system kind of went down the tubes. Maybe this Jesus is pretty dangerous. So, you know, it's really interesting because the Roman army asked to stay, but Jesus is asked to leave. Interesting. And then the guy wants to go with him, and he refuses, says, you know what you do? You go back to your people, You know, your people, the Decapolis people, the Gentile people. And you tell them how much the Lord has done for you and what mercy he has shown you. This is about the only time Jesus ever refers to himself as Lord in Mark. Because to the readers of Mark's gospel, Jesus is the Lord even above the Roman army. He's the Lord even of that. Whoa. And so he goes away and proclaims in the Decapolis, in the 10 cities, how much Jesus had done for him, and everyone was amazed.